Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost an hour. 50 minutes every afternoon as we take a look at our culture, current events, and our Catholic faith. And interesting things like what David Letterman looks like now. Because I found that as I was doing some show prep earlier, and I would not recognize him. Maybe that's what he's going for, right? To say, hey, I'm retired, I'm hanging out here. I'm going to be all incognito. Nobody has to recognize me, and that's part of the plan. Don't know. But it was interesting to see what I saw a little bit earlier. So that was surprising, to say the least. Well, you can find that on my Facebook page, Leo C. Brown. You'll follow me over there. You'll see what I'm talking about. But some things to talk about this afternoon. As we head through Holy Week here and we move toward Holy Thursday, Pope Francis with some beautiful reflection today on the washing of feet, what this looks like, what this means in our culture today, and of course spent a little bit of time with the discussing the situation in Brussels as well. And also what empowering women looks like when it comes to really making a global difference. I'm talking about human ecology, right? All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in just a moment.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You'll find the interesting things I post over there. Like I mentioned a moment ago, the it's a shocking image. That's the only thing I can say about it. If you follow me on Facebook, you'll know what I'm talking about. You can dig it up, you can Google it up, you'll find what I mentioned a moment ago. The bald and bearded, which isn't that a beautiful thing, right? To be both bald and bearded. I had I was cultivating quite the beard for a while, and then my wife and I went on her chartered cruise with her company, and somehow after a few drinks, she kind of Delilah'd me into shaving my beard off, and so now I've got, as our three-year-old says, a beard that's almost gone, because it's just a little inkling of a soul patch now, but David Letterman out there in full Santa Claus mode. I think maybe that's what he's... You may see him cropping up at Macy's coming up this Christmas, so we'll see. But again, those are the kind of fun things you get to see when you follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. We, of course, have our Wednesday Holy Audience with our Holy Father, Pope Francis, and today was a day when he had the opportunity to address this unfortunate, yet again, right, here we go, yet again another situation with terrorist activity, and the opportunity to pray in solidarity with those who lost their lives, of course, those who lost loved ones, those who are injured. And not that he mentioned this, but I don't know if you saw this. I didn't repost it because I was just digging through and flipping through things. But The Blaze reported this earlier. I saw that's Glenn Beck's website and platform there. Apparently, there's a Mormon missionary who was injured in this attack. He was at the airport. He was also a block away in Paris from that, and also waiting for his mother at the finish line in the Boston Marathon attack. But my goodness, right? How does that? That's just bizarre, to say the least. But of course, as you as we look at this, as we look at this time, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but our Holy Father talks about foot washing and what that's all about, and address that a bit in this Catholic News Agency report that I posted over on my Facebook page. But there's something about the solidarity. There's something about unfortunate things that happen that allow us to come together, allow us to suffer together, right? That's part of this. It's not about, hey, let's just cheer up, right? Let's just get over it. That's not what this is about. It's about let's walk on this journey together so that we can have the opportunity to suffer well. And then when you look at which is always fascinating me, and I don't know if you've taken the time, I don't know if you've really kind of looked at this from this perspective, but it gives us this opportunity this time of year. Of course, every Easter we have this opportunity to look at this concept of foot washing, because I got to admit, as a convert, I'd never seen this before. There was no reason why I would have ever seen this. And the first time I saw it, it was a little creepy. It was something that it just didn't really sit well with me. I was like, that's not, what is this? That doesn't make sense. This, and I think one of the first, I don't even know that I was Catholic at the time. One of the first experiences, like, I got my foot washed and I was like, what is this? Right? This, I don't get it. It was just weird. And then to understand that this is only expressed in the Gospel of John, right? The three others that we call the synoptics, because they're synonyms of sorts, right? They mirror each other. All have this experience of the Last Supper, which to me, even though I had not experienced that until becoming Catholic, when I sat down to my first Seder meal, I was a little more comfortable with that than this idea of foot washing. It just was weird. But then you see this expression of what happens with Jesus doing this. And to me, it's like, why wasn't this a part of the other Gospels? And maybe it's because it was kind of a common thing. He hadn't maybe done this before, but this was a common practice, as was the Seder meal, right? As was the Last Supper. But he didn't radicalize foot washing in the way that the Last Supper was radicalized, right? Scandalized, even, perhaps, because of changing it. Right. What he did, he modeled what the servants would do in the foot washing. And so maybe it wasn't as impactful, but John captured this in a way that said, this is what it's about. Right. This is what this is all about. Whereas the others really chose to focus on what the heck is going on in the middle of the Seder meal, where we should be in this prescription that we've had for years and years and years, the way we've expressed this, now suddenly it's getting changed completely because Jesus is standing up and saying, oh, hey, this is my body. This is my blood. Where did that come from, right? So while that impacted, obviously, enough of an impact to be expressed almost identically among the three other Gospels, then we have the story of the foot washing that's expressed in John's Gospel, which is really, for me, and maybe not for you, that's the challenging part, right? I know that's crazy. I mean, I'm a convert to Catholicism. I can fully accept even though I don't understand it, I don't need to understand it, I can fully accept the body and blood of Christ being truly, totally, substantially present in the Eucharist. I'm willing to accept that. I believe in the true presence of Christ. Not symbolic, not some sort of if you believe it, it's real kind of thing. It's real, right? Truly, substantially present, unquestionable. I've embraced that since the get-go. But what is tougher, and I would venture to say this is tougher for all of us if we start to think about it. What's really tougher is what's expressed on Holy Thursday and what is presented only in John's Gospel, but what is a challenge to us all that this is how we live that Eucharist, right? This is what it's about. This is what a people, a Eucharistic people, looks like. This is what we do for one another. We take the form of the slave. We take the form of the servant. And we're there helping each other out. Now, I'm sure you've heard before the analogy that the only difference between heaven and hell is that they look exactly the same, right? There's hell is sitting around the table with far too long of chopsticks to actually eat the food and being frustrated that you can't eat. Heaven is the exact same situation except you're feeding one another. And I think that as simplistic as that illustration may be, there's beauty there in understanding that that's how we live our faith. And that's one of the most beautiful elements that we have when it comes to this time of Easter. As we move through this Triduum, as we move through this time of expressing and embracing what it is that this beautiful expression of Easter offers us, we can begin to say, okay, how do I do this better? How do I pray for the grace to do this better? And maybe it's creepy. Maybe the ceremony that we experience through this on Holy Thursday, it could have some degree of weirdness to you. It was to me. I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure that there are those who've been raised Catholic and still find it a little bit bizarre. And then there are those, of course, who want to criticize Pope Francis. Why he's washing the feet of women and refugees. Yeah. What is it about? What's it really about? It's about a change of heart for us, right? To get to the point to say, okay, maybe it's not about me, right? Maybe I need to get over myself, and maybe I need to realize that this is an opportunity for me to step into living my faith with a little bit more focus in a way that is evident to others, that there's an impact on them because, you know what, I am taking that step out of my comfort zone to go and do something of this nature. And then, of course, you know, there's the receptivity. I mean, somebody on the other side of whatever we're offering has got to be receptive to it, and that can be a challenge as well. So it's an interesting time for us all to kind of look at this and say, how do we do this better? How do we embrace this more fully? And how do we really cooperate with that grace? So we got the opportunity as we move through this Holy Week. More to come in just a moment. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, almost hour. 50 minutes every afternoon, almost an hour, as we look at culture, current events, our Catholic faith. And then this that happened to me today, I discover because my wife texted me and said, the shoes you ordered, our three-year-old Silas came in, but they were six youth, not six toddler. And I had this problem because I bought our eight-year-old socks that I thought I was getting socks to fit him, and it turned out that they were toddler socks. So I try. Apparently, Silas broke into tears because his shoes wouldn't fit. I ordered him Easter shoes because for some reason, shoes just disappear for this child. I don't know where they go. I don't know. We have one. It's like socks, right? I get the sock thing. The washing machine, I believe, eats them. But where do shoes go? How does he lose shoes? I don't understand. So obviously, I can't tell the difference when ordering or purchasing, even in the store, the difference in the sizes. So there's, you know, I'm not a detail. If you know me, I'm not a detail guy. I'm a big picture. I'll look at the big picture. I see the horizon very clearly. The stuff up close, which is just exactly opposite of the way I actually see, which is really weird, right? I mean, that's the irony. Anyway, what do you do? Interesting story here from Catholic News Agency talking about empower women, you empower the world. This is what the Vatican tells the United Nations. And I think that this is one of those messages that are so completely misunderstood from the outside looking in to the Catholic Church, because it is seen, unfortunately, as some sort of boys club, no women allowed, He-Man, women haters, whatever. And the opposite is actually true. And unfortunately, I guess we have to kind of look back on maybe how we've sold this message, that it hasn't necessarily been very well presented when it comes to exactly what we believe as people of faith. And just because, you know, it's just because you put your men in the front line of infantry does not mean you're anti-woman. And I know that there will be those who say that's chauvinistic, that's crazy. No, it's men are expendable, right? Who gets on the lifeboat first? Women and children, because these are the ones that we want to protect. The men, dime a dozen. Get rid of them all, and there'll be more. That's the message. And not that human life is not valuable, but when it comes to who is precious, who we protect, who we exalt, it's the women and the children. These are the ones who are our future. So to understand this, and I don't know if I blogged or I essayed this. I don't really know. I think a blog, you'd have to be more consistent than I am. I write things sometimes when I get a notion and say, I can't get this off my head until I express it in writing. And I did do this. It's out there somewhere on a blog site that you could probably find if you chose. But I tried to express this, certainly from my understanding as a lay Catholic and what I get from really examining this very closely and realizing that it's about the exaltation of woman that men are priests, right? This is the front line of infantry. These are the ones who are there washing the feet literally daily. These are the ones who are truly have given themselves completely. And they are there at our service, at our disposal. And women are better than that. You may ask, well, what about women religious? Aren't they doing that? No, they're not. No, they're not. They're not in the priest mode. They're not in this mode of sacrificing everything for you. There's a cloistered understanding of religious who are there to express their particular vocation in a way that's completely different than the priesthood. So it's hard, I know, looking at this because it's like, well, those guys are the guys calling the shots. Those guys are the ones in charge. No, those guys are the ones who are there to serve you completely. And if you've ever had a friend who's a priest, and I've been very blessed to have more than a handful of priests who I would consider my friends, who I try to communicate with, try to communicate with on a regular basis. It's difficult. Even those that I know well, it's difficult to connect with them personally because they're so incredibly busy to find the time. And then sometimes there may be times where we're at lunch and they got to go because they got the call that they're needed somewhere else. This is, it's not a life of luxury. It's not a life of power and position. It's one of service, and it's one of complete sacrifice. So this bizarre perception that we have that the priests are somehow special or exalted, or that's not why they're there. And if there are those who live that way, then that's wrong. It's kind of like going to the conclave as the Pope, right? You don't do that. You don't go that there with that assumption, because you're going to come out a cardinal. So I think that this message has to be understood, that as people of faith, we want to exalt women. And there's unfortunate areas of the world where women are still second-class citizens. There's unfortunate areas where women are treated as property, and not even, you don't have to necessarily find another culture for that. There's that attitude even within our own culture. We know this, unfortunately. But to realize that this is the dignity that is afforded to each and every individual is what is the absolute hinge point to what we understand, certainly as Catholics. And if that message has been not well received, it's probably because it has not been well presented. And I think we have to sit back and kind of re-examine how we're doing this, because it's authentic femininity that is the model of Christianity, even. And that's a tough one, right? That's one I think is even tougher. When you look at our Blessed Mother as the model of the church, and we as the bride, right? All of us being bride-like, and what that truly means to be in that mode of complete and total receptivity of love, right? And we talk about this kind of stuff almost biologically, theologically, with Father Thomas Loya once a week when we talk about theology of the body stuff. But that's what this means. There's a model of authentic femininity that says there's such a receptivity to grace. Certainly when you look at this as a model of our faith, can we do that? Are we able to do that? Can we put ourselves in that position to be that open to what the Holy Spirit is leading us to? Wanting to birth in us, right? Wanting to impregnate in us to bring forth something new. Those type of analogies are amazing when you start digging into this, and I think the tougher stuff, quite honestly. But we, unfortunately, far too often kind of just let things be surface. And we don't dig down in here, and we don't dig deep, and we don't understand, wow, right? It is not just the literal, but it's also the allegorical, right? This is saying something else. And it's not just saying something else. It's also saying something that is trying to teach me something. As stubborn as I may be, and as obstinate as often I am, I'm trying to be taught something. Trying to be taught something. Because this ultimately has eternal effects. And I need to understand that now, right? You get the opportunity to understand it now. And we go through the motions, and we don't really look at this. And sometimes we're the worst critic of the church that we're in, because we think, oh, well, how dare they have that attitude toward men? How dare they have that attitude toward marriage? How dare they have that whatever stuck in the Dark Ages mentality. And you see this far too often. I heard, you know, my wife and I were on the cruise last week, and there was a musician who was very transparent, very willing to share a lot of interesting things. She was not raised Catholic, but she made a comment that just kind of hung in my heart. She said, well, I left the church. Well, not really. The church left me. And, I mean, in this piano bar where she's performing, she happens to say this. And I honestly wanted to have a conversation with her to say, what exactly do you mean by that? Because I think there's so many who would say the same thing, that it was the church who abandoned them because the church has these stringent rules or these particular ways of seeing things that aren't progressive enough or aren't with the times or aren't accessible culturally, whatever. And I think there are far too many who unfortunately have bought that lie. And then this girl performs all this praise and worship stuff on a cruise ship in a bar. I'm thinking, what is happening? This is insane. And it's obviously still in her heart, but pray for her. More to come. I'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. And follow me over on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You'll find where I posted this earlier, which already got an interesting amount of response. Sarah Palin in a new courtroom-based reality show. Apparently happening sometime soon. And this is interesting to me because apparently she's not a judge, right? She was a governor of a state. But I guess because even she has an appeal even beyond her base, right? There are those who love her for who she is. And then there are those who find her kind of like a vaudeville act, I guess, of sorts, right? There's something so campy and bizarre that they're willing to watch just because of that. So who knows? But apparently the ink is on the contract, and we will be watching this come out at some point. Whether you are a Sarah Palin fan or not, it'll be there for your viewing pleasure soon enough. Another bizarre story here. Axe body spray causes church evacuation. Apparently, Relevant Magazine is talking about this. A church in Seattle had to be evacuated this week because of the overwhelming stench of Axe body spray. So, you can use too much, apparently. So, moderation, the key, I think, is something you want to think about there. So, don't watch a lot of cable news. I watch very little TV, quite frankly. I watch The Walking Dead, and I used to watch Call the Midwife, and I don't even know if it's back. I haven't seen it in some time. So those are the only two programs I really ever watched. So now I'm just down to one. And then I'll probably watch Fear the Walking Dead because it's coming around after the season wraps up of Walking Dead. But I really don't watch a lot of cable news. But I am constantly perusing news through Twitter. That's kind of where I get my my filtration process out there, because I follow everything. If it's a news site, regardless of how bizarre and fringe it is, I probably have it on my Twitter feed. That's just a guess. But this one showed up, and it's from Fox News talking about apparently one of the hosts there criticizing President Obama for his comments on the Brussels attack and his commitment to continue to pursue ISIS in every way imaginable. I think the concern was if he's against waterboarding, but for droning, then there's a problem there. So I don't know. I don't know what the inconsistencies were exactly, but there have been others who say, well, you know, he was in this with these scheduled events in Cuba. He could have gotten on the plane and flown to the White House. And then I guess the question is, or flown to Brussels, I suppose. But what do you do there, right? What do you do there? And not that I am standing in defense of our president, who I disagree with on many things. But you kind of got to ask, what can one do in a situation of this nature? There certainly seems to be evidence that we have, that this administration has been tough and continues to be tough and trying to find a way to combat something that's almost impossible to combat. I think that that's something we got to understand. Drone strike, airstrike, all the heck you want in Syria, and these radicalized Muslims are still going to pop up in Brussels. How do you address that? How do you address that in a situation where they're already on the most high alert imaginable? But in another story, I think this one came from Business Insider. This is posted on my Facebook page as well. Apparently, there was a discarded laptop where they found a suicide note from one of these attackers. And it seemed to indicate that it was in response to this one particular terror leader who was arrested. Then they felt like they had to escalate this already planned attack because otherwise they were going to get caught. And then how do you deal with that, right? Because these are, in most cases, not exclusively, but in often the cases, these are citizens of the country. Sure, they have an undoubted connection nationally to the Middle East, but they're Western citizens who are doing things of this nature. And I think that's the toughest one. And then, of course, you've got the grandstanding and political bandwagoning that's out there when it comes to some of the candidates basically saying, well, I think it was in this particular case, I think it was Trump and Cruz who were suggesting that now, well, we need to step up. This is proof, right? We need to step up the surveillance, if you will, of Muslims in the country, or we need to not let others in. And even then, what is that doing? I think there's measures we're going to have to eventually address and take. And that might even look like something before even getting in. I think there have been, from what I've read so far, there are countries who are already doing this. You can't even get near the airport without passing security, right? It's not just getting into the terminal, because this took place in the there at the check-in counter area, apparently. So there's those who have said, okay, we're not even going to allow that. And maybe the same is true for any public transit. You're not going to be able to get even close to these areas without a security checkpoint before getting there. And yeah, that makes it inconvenient. There are those who say, well, you know, we're trading a freedom for some kind of security that doesn't necessarily make sense, and we're not interested in doing something of that nature. But those are practical measures that could be put into play that would say, okay, well, at least we're going to try to make this a little safer. But then when it comes down to somebody hell-bent on destruction, what do you do? I think it's still out there somewhere in our world of podcast recordings that is a talk from, I don't know, a year or so ago. I can't remember exactly when this happened, but if you Google up Daniel Ali, you're probably going to find more than just the talk he did in Lexington, Kentucky, you're probably going to find a number of his talks. He's written books about Islam, having come from a experience as a Muslim, then converting into the Catholic faith. And his perspective is so bizarre, but good, right? And when I heard him talk, I thought, my goodness, right? This is not what I expected at all, but it's what I needed to hear. And I think it's worth listening to what he has to say, because it's poetic, even the way he presents things. But one thing is, as he expresses this, how we deal with this, how we respond, it's basically the message in a nutshell, spoiler alert, is that we just have to focus on our own faith. And that's the last thing we want to do necessarily, right? We always want to say, well, fix this, fix that, clean this up, be stricter here, respond this way, do that, and then it's all good. But his message essentially is, get your own house in order. That's the best absolute thing you can do. And once you have a true dedication to your own faith, then maybe that's enough, right? Which is, I don't think, the message most of us want to hear, again, because we want to hear it go this way or that way towards some sort of outside solution that is going to some way somehow solve something, which typically doesn't anyway. We might be safer in some respects since the post 9/11 mentality, but obviously these kind of things can still happen. But it's certainly been an opportunity, again, for the politicians, the candidates, to have a heyday with this. I posted this over on my Facebook page as well. Yeah, and you know, not that it's not bad enough, it hasn't already been bad, but when you get to this point where we've got a mudslinging that is completely uncalled for, and I don't know what Donald Trump is trying to say to Ted Cruz when he's going to spill the beans on Cruz's wife, but I don't know. I think Cruz started this with something about Trump's wife, and now it's escalated to the point of now it's about each other's spouses. It's not even about the policy, and it's kind of the childish stuff we've seen from the beginning with talking about people's size of their hands or their height. Or I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy what we're dealing with. And we're not seeing presidential qualities here that I'm seeing when you go there with this type of ridiculous name calling and then bringing spouses, wives into this. It's childish. So anyway, that ABC News story is over at my Facebook page. You want to check it out. And the bearded, bald David Letterman as well. So you can take a look at that. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.